All right, we're back. Oh, you didn't do the...
Just we're back.
Kevin's back.
Hey, that's the second only to having a personal soundtrack that follows you anytime you enter a room. People should always say that.
In unison.
Yes.
Right in front of you.
Exactly.
Kevin's back.
Like a norm.
Exactly.
From Cheers
like
thing.
A norm thing. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you. It's good to be back.
We're glad to have you back. And speaking of being back, we've changed locales again. We've been, so for the last couple of weeks, those of you that are just tuning in, Kevin has been being a dad to his
paternity
newborn.
Leave.
He's on paternity leave, right? And we've been doing the show with Mark Cuvion, who's with us here tonight.
I'm here.
And we've been in Mark's garage, and it's been nice. You had a lots of Star Wars. We always knew where we were going because there was a light up
Star Wars
Christmas
nativity.
Decoration.
Not nativity, but Star Wars
inflatables.
Inflatable, yeah,
yes. Christmas themed.
At any point, it was Mark out in his driveway, kind of George Michael like, with a fake lightsaber?
Pretty much every time.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that's weird that
you
picked
the pew,
that.
Pew
yeah.
sound
only
like
once in my boxers, however.
Okay, that's good.
I do want to say one thing, and it's fucking freezing tonight, and we only had one.
Oh my god!
We did this for it's literally freezing, Kevin. We did this for I guess it's not literally freezing, but close enough.
It's like 34 degrees.
It's close.
It's
yeah,
damn
close.
Down to 31.
Only one night at Mark's was it this cold, and I was pitching a fit because Mark had a not really pitching a fit, but he has a hole in his garage ceiling. And I was like, well, at least at Kevin's wood, there won't be a hole in the ceiling. But
no, there really is.
There is. There's a big hole in the ceiling.
Yeah. Oddly enough,
welcome
things go in the attic.
Is...
You got to get there one way or the other. Although I will say this about the – and I thought about this today knowing that we were going to record in here tonight. Having had occasion to be an audience member at the Letterman show once, they keep it really cold in there.
Yeah, like 52 degrees.
It's colder than that. Like it's bring a sweater cold. And what they tell you when you're in line, they spend a lot of time prepping you to like be to be really enthusiastic. But they tell you that it's going to be cold, and it's to keep the comedy fresh. So I like to think that's what we're doing here tonight.
We're keeping the comedy fresh.
Keeping it fresh. All right, yeah, I'll buy
well,
that.
I'm trying to thaw
so
it
what
out.
Was happening in the summer?
We were the comedy was hot in the summer.
It was pretty fucking stale.
It was.
Let's get into the show. So all right, we're back. Or Kevin's back. So
we're all back.
I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm Mark.
This is Somebody Likes It.
So apparently an interesting collaboration has recently resurfaced that Shane would like to tell us about.
Yes, I will. I will say something about this. I don't know that it recently resurfaced.
Or
I mean,
recently surfaced.
Yeah. So Paul McCartney and Kanye West co-wrote a song, which just those words in and of itself. Like, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Drop the mic. Good night.
Yeah.
You know, Skylar told me about this first. And
I guess it's been rumored for a while.
I didn't hear a damn thing about it, but what I love is that there were lots of things all over the internet, much along the lines of, I don't know, from Kanye West fans saying, I don't know who that fuck this Paul McCartney dude is, but Kanye just handed him a career.
Nice.
That
really?
Somebody said that
happened? I believe that that's almost a direct quote. Yeah, Kanye just handed this guy a career.
Who said that?
I don't know. I didn't see any of this stuff.
That guy living in an amazing snow
91.
It's amazing to me sometimes like how disconnected people are from
their own little
the
sphere
world.
Of
you know. No, I mean they're only in their own little sphere. They're completely mm-hmm. disconnected from current events or past events or history of
I
any
I do recall an old manager of mine at a restaurant I was working at saying that the first time he knew he was old, when he saw two kids like flipping through records at a record store, and they saw like Paul McCartney like with the Beatles, and one of them's like, "See, I told you he was in a band before Wings."
Oh yeah, yeah. Here's my question: like as you guys were talking about this, I was wondering, like, So does this mean that Kanye West is going to buy Paul McCartney's old catalog and fuck him over?
That's a good
just like
this some sort of is the traditional
Beatlesque pattern strip, like where somebody's always pulling the football out. Like
so, like the current like African American music star R&D. Is Lucy,
yeah, exactly.
And Paul McCartney is Charlie Brown, and his catalog is the football.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. In our metaphor of comedy,
you heard it here first, folks.
I listened to the song last night. It's a good song. I will say this. I like Kanye West. I think he's batshit crazy.
Oh yeah,
and is a complete fame whore. But he is legitimately a musical genius. I think. I mean, he's definitely the most interesting thing in hip hop in the last 10 years.
I wouldn't know a Kanye West song if it like.
Yes, you would.
But I literally can't name one. And if you put one on,
maybe
right
we should
now.
Go down that road.
Yeah, I should pick a Kanye West album.
I do think it's kind of interesting with regard to Kanye West that like there are not one, but like two stories that have been retold often about Kanye West singing his own material out loud, like just to friends. Like, here, come over here and I'm going to sing you my whole album. Like that shit apparently happened recently. Seth Rogen ran into him in New York. And he was talking about this on the Stern Show a couple of weeks ago. Ran into him in New York in the lobby of some hotel. And Kanye was like, hey, come out and get in my limo. And then he proceeded to, like, rap him his whole record with Seth Rogen.
Like, all
wife.
43 minutes of it,
yeah,
or whatever the fuck.
Like, they're sitting in the car, and here's Kanye West, like, 3 feet from their face, doing his whole album. And they're like, you know, and of course, Stern's asking, was like, well, was it good? And he was like, yeah. They're like, did you listen to all of it? He's like, where are we going to go? Like, it's weird kind of
you
stuff.
You can't hit pause.
No, you can't.
There was some Aziz Ansari thing, you know, he has him come over, and I think similar thing, he's just sitting around with a bunch of people, like, on his couch, and he's playing his own music for them at the party. Yeah,
it's fantastic. Like, it's a good time.
Well, I listened to the song, and the song is good. I mean, he's got the. He's not a great. It's a singing. It's not a rap song. It's a singing song. But it's really melancholy. McCartney plays the keys on it. It's like a cool like Rhodes, like a Fender Rhodes kind of sound or something like vintage keyboards, and it's like about his mom that died. Like she had complications, like she died in the middle of like cosmetic surgery a few years ago.
Oh.
I think it was cosmetic.
Like a Joan Rivers situation?
No, like I think she was having liposuction.
Well, or could have been a Joan Rivers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, something like that. So anyway, it was a good song. But apparently, a lot of people in this world don't know who Paul McCartney is.
God damn, that's crazy.
It's crazy
you
to me.
You gotta be if you're Paul McCartney. It's like that's the situation. You'd be like, well, what else could I have done? Nothing.
Unless you're like your son Miles that was just born.
That's true.
2 months ago.
Well, that Rivers doesn't know who Paul McCartney is.
Yeah. No, but she. Well, yeah, you're probably right.
If you're under the age of 5, you get a free pass.
Yeah,
but after that, like, no, that's fucking ridiculous.
Anybody who's teaching older kids in school, though. I mean.
Yeah, well, every pre-K curricula should have a Beatles education course.
It was like nearly 3 years ago when the Titanic century anniversary came about, and all these people were tweeting about how they couldn't believe that the Titanic was actually a real ship. Like, they thought it was just a movie. So,
well, that's what... Yeah, never mind. All right.
Anyway,
let's get on to the album of the week. Kevin, you picked this week, and you wanted to try something a little different as is my want,
and you know, and it's I've been away for a little while, and so one of the things that we had talked about doing, but never quite gotten around to before I went on hiatus was sabbatical. Before I went to find myself in my
in my progeny.
Oh, yes, oh, I saw you soon after the child was born. Like, you may have been hallucinating.
No,
lack
I think
of
it's
sleep.
I'll put any peyote story in the world up against 2 hours of sleep in 4 days. But anyway, so yeah, one of the things that I wanted to do was. We talked about doing a comedy record, and this is not a comedy record that I knew before I raised.
Yeah,
the flag.
You heard like one bit, I guess.
I heard something on the cable radio the other day, and I was like, okay, this is pretty funny. And I've always thought that, and specifically, we're talking about Dimitri Martin's record, stand up comedian.
Yeah, he had a special that came out a few years ago, just called Comedian.
Yes, yeah, he's always very. His titling is very straightforward, but anyway, yeah, I I always have thought that he was entertaining, but it's one of these, like, you know, his style is something that I can't, you know, I can't subsist on it. I can, like, you know, it's a little bit of dessert here and there. He has a very sort of specific
like
approach
the way
to
I
comedy.
Listen to the Beastie Boys.
Well, sure.
I can take it here and there, but I can't do the whole thing.
I'm so surprised to hear you say that.
I can listen to this whole record.
Yeah, I thought it was hilarious.
No,
but
I thought it was too.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm a fan, but I definitely found myself like we'll dive into this, but yeah, I did want to listen to a semi-contemporary comedy record that I didn't already know, and stand-up comedian was one that I didn't know, and also interestingly enough, this is one where he doesn't, you know, doesn't use a lot of visual aids.
Well,
I mean, of course, yeah, you can't.
But CD. That.
But, you know, obviously, the man has worked in a variety of ways, often visually. And anyway, it was a fun journey to take, and I'm glad we took it.
Well, for people that haven't heard him before, that was one of his sticks. Can you pluralize sticks?
Sticks.
That's one of the things that he did. He did like three. His stuff was always somewhat surreal. He drew pictures, and that was part of. He would draw pictures on this big easel. He would flip it over. And he would do songs. A lot of his act was songs, music with one-liners over it, and one-liners. Sure. He does one-liner, and in this album, he keeps the one-liners in where he just sprinkles them in. This is actually you can see the maturity of an artist a lot, I think, in this. It's
no,
meatier.
I think he's grown,
it's
sure.
weightier than.
But like, they're still not long jokes. I mean, this is an album. I mean, like, if we're trying to pick songs to talk about, we got like 117 of them.
Yeah, well, and it's. Let's be clear. Like, he's a comedian in the style of, not exactly in the delivery style of, but in terms of the construction of his jokes. Mitch Hedberg, Stephen Wright.
I hadn't thought of Mitch Hedberg. Well, okay, the way and this is less Stephen Wright than his earlier stuff, I think. But one of the things that became really obvious to me is he does have longer jokes. The jokes are what. Oh, and he cusses a bunch on this record.
He works a little blue.
It's quite entertaining. He does it really well. And I like him. He talks about titties. Oh, by the way, before we get into this conversation.
Are you going to talk about titties?
No, I'm not going to talk. This has nothing to do with titties. I mean, why?
I'm a little disappointed.
I know. I thought you might be.
Doesn't everything have to
we need
titties?
To.
We have to charge extra.
We need to establish a couple of ground rules, I think, because I think it would be really easy.
What we need is rules.
Yeah. No. Just a couple light things. I think it would be really easy for us to just go ahead and reference a lot of his jokes because they're one-liners and they're quick things. So I think we need to pick one and only do it once, because I have one that I want to do, because I have to mention it, because it's very you, Ryan.
A bit?
Yeah. We can't just sit here back and forth, because it would be too easy to retell these jokes.
Remember that one joke? Because
they're
so funny.
His ideas are so like quick. They're not complicated setups.
Well, you can make the argument that that it's easy to do commentary about comedy poorly. And so I think it's like, you know, the way that I thought that we might approach this is that these are conversations, and so
right. But I mean, it just I would hate for us to sit here and retell, because they're easy, they're not complicated setups, and you know, nobody wants to sit around and hear somebody's second telling of
jokes. Was kind of wanting to do was to tell all the jokes in order from the beginning.
We'll just like pass the mic around
of his career. Yeah. Until right.
Did
now.
You print that out? I see a thick stack of paper right
there.
Dot
Matrix.
So I did. I do have a little something that I want to read though. This is I pulled a review from a site called The Comics Comic. That is one thing that was kind of interesting about doing the research on things that other people have said about this record. In particular, like, there are sites that they only review comedy records. So
stands to reason.
Anyway, and this guy says, telling a good joke is difficult. I don't mean the kind of joke where you get to develop a story with characters and emotions and your opinions and reflection. I'm talking about the kind of joke where you say a thing that is just an observation and follow it up with a thing that is funny. Setup, punchline. If you're thinking that this isn't too difficult, go ahead and think about the last time that you tried to tell a joke to a group of people. Oh, it was embarrassing, wasn't it? I bet you stumbled and forgot a detail and ended the punchline with something lame like "to that effect," or "I think that's how it goes," or "I'll show myself out and please don't tell my friends and family about this." And so he goes on to say that Dimitri Martin is good at telling jokes, and that most of them, you know, as to underscore his method, most of them are sort of these quick, you know, to use the boxing parlance, they're jabs, like they're quick punches.
I like how you were saying before, and I was saying I like how he keeps the one-liners in there, but he's moved away and grown. And I think one of the ways that he did that was he uses the one-liner as an idea. And then builds the joke around that idea, like almost like you can see, like, this is the foundation, this whatever the one-liner might be, and then he'll just build the little thing rather than just say the, like in the past he would just throw in the one-liner like a Stephen Wright thing and then move on. This time he would have the one-liner as the foundation and have a little bit of stuff around that.
Cool. Well, and he'll segue, sure. You know, in ways that Stephen Wright didn't really do. Like, they were just standalones with Stephen Wright, and you know. Dimitri Martin on this will kind of segue from one thing using a theme. And he did something that I've never seen him do or listened to him do, crowd work. It's only right. Like one little bit, but...
Holy shit, it's great. It's maybe my favorite part of the record.
He did some good crowd work on this album, yeah.
Well, and I do think to the point that both of you guys are bringing up, like, he seems looser up there than maybe he has before.
Why don't you play a little bit, Kevin? Like, we just give people a taste of what he's...
Can you get the bit with the crowd work in there? I don't know if you have...
Yeah, bits, sure. Picked out. That is... It's Middle Names.
Yeah.
It's actually the... It's off of the segment called, appropriately enough, Names, and it's where he's talking about middle names. So we'll play a little bit of that, and then we'll come back on the other side. Here it is.
I said to my friend, "Hey, what's your middle name?" He said, "I have two middle names." And then I said, "Then you have no middle names. You have a space. You have two middle names? Your parents got greedy, huh? Do you prefer one of them to the other? You don't like either. What are they?"
"Roger and Elmer."
"Roger and Elmer. All right. Elmer's not... Is that common in these parts?" Trying to ask a polite question just to make sure. "Roger and Elmer. That sounds like the result of a very boring debate between your parents. I like how pilots signify that they understood something. Well, I love glue. We can both win here. Elmer, Roger."
So yeah, a very, very boring debate between your parents.
That's funny stuff.
And for whatever reason, our mother actually has two middle names. So
yeah, Carolyn Margaret.
Yeah.
No, it's Margaret Jean.
Yeah.
Actually.
Anyway, the point. Yeah. Anyhow. Point being, is maybe she has.
Oh, this isn't the one that she tunes
she
into.
She doesn't go by Carolyn. She goes by Jean.
Yeah.
In any case, speaking of boring conversations about
sort of inside baseball,
family,
as it were.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. No, this was a great example of him working the crowd and just being loose and having some fun with it. And holy God, you know, if he didn't plant that guy in the audience whose middle names were Roger,
no, he
and Albert,
knocked like, that out of the park.
Yeah. You can't.
And you look at like a Paula Poundstone, who, like, that's kind of her stock in trade. She'll just do that. Go on a riff for like 10 minutes or something,
right.
But like, he's not known for that. He's
no.
A very regimented sort of comic.
That's partially why I like, well, number one, the material is just really strong, and it's a funny record. He's always been a quirky record. Surreal. He's one step away from being a pun, like a punny comedian.
I could see that.
And I hate punny comedians, but he stays just far enough away to where it's just surreal.
Or those guys who do like the misdirection where you think it's going to go one way and every single time they, you know, like pull the rug out from under you and you get like, oh yeah, this is how every joke's
there's that
go.
Too. You know, yeah. I actually one of the things in my notes here is talks about how he to me, like, he has a lot more confidence. I mean, he's always been funny. He has a lot more confidence, and I think it's funnier.
Well, does anybody know how old he is? My first encounter with him would have been like on the Daily Show,
Trends.
Like, I don't know, 8-9 years ago.
Yeah, when he
like,
did Trends.
He was the senior youth correspondent.
But he was already in his late 20s then.
And before that, he wrote for Conan when Conan was still doing the Late Show at NBC.
So. Okay, so he's got to be in his, what, mid-30s now?
I would say early to mid-30s. But he looks – I know he looks really young. I remember hearing an interview with him on Fresh Air. But I really – I want to finish this real quick. So I had dinner with Skylar tonight, and I was like, oh, I listen – you know, we're doing stand-up comedian, Demetri Martin, because I know she really likes him. She's like, it's funny. I was just talking to somebody within the last week that said that they didn't like this record, and I was like, really? And they're like, yeah, they said that he's just mean now. And I was like, the fuck did they listen to? Like, he's not – it's
mean.
Like, well, that's – and that's what – I thought about it for a little while, and I think, like, that what we perceive is – because he has a really kind of milk toasty – I mean, his – don't get me – he's got, like, an image like John Mulaney. But John Mulaney, nobody's going to accuse him of – but there's a little bit of a dark edge with John Mulaney just every so often that makes it amusing rather than, you know, just like jokes that are just fun for the whole family. And he's got that kind of like milquetoast thing. He's always had that with his gimmicks and stuff like that. And he's abandoned that, and he's got like a confidence thing, and he says – fuck a couple times and titties a couple times and stuff like that, and that's the only thing that I could think that somebody would think that he was mean.
Well, that just sounds like somebody who wasn't paying attention or hasn't listened to that record.
That is a really,
recently,
like, really like, sensitive like, person.
Yeah, I know. Well, I couldn't get it, but I honestly, what I think what we perceive as confidence, that person perceived as arrogance.
So
he's 41, by the way.
Oh,
he's,
oh, yeah. Wow! Oh, I didn't know he was that old.
He's your age.
Are you talking to Mark?
No, I'm looking at you, pal. Shane?
Anyway, yeah, so the point is that, I do think that he seems to be growing in his approach, or at least, you know, as of when this record came out. It seems like he's clearly having some fun up there.
Well, there's a confidence that comes from being on stage, like, so many times to where you just feel at home there, and he's clearly got it.
Can I say one thing? I think we can't say confidence this many times without playing the confidence bit. Like, so we'll have to do that in just a minute.
Playing what?
The surprise party bit.
Oh yeah. That's right. That's funny. Okay, right.
Yeah,
we should do that next when we take our break. We'll do that. That yeah.
Anyway, Shane, you were saying.
Well, one of the things that I always thought was really funny. Was when he was the Daily Show youth correspondent, and he always dressed in like high waters and really, I mean, it was like that was like they had his own little theme song, Trends, you know, and he would draw stuff, and he was just like the squarest youth correspondent there was. And then you think about it, and he was already like in his 30s at that point. Like, it's just like layered hilarity.
He was the 21 Jump Street of comedy.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Shave my beard off and make me funny, and I could do that job.
Maybe. See all. Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. That's true. That's true.
All right. So yeah. So and it occurs to me, and we didn't really talk about this ahead of time, but I mean, maybe it does make sense for us to just sprinkle in some shorter versions of more bits in this thing, since the form of this particular record is a little bit different. One point that I would like to make before we maybe throw on a little bit of his surprise party bit is, you know, he actually left law school at NYU to pursue comedy. And so when I see him sort of unpack some of the things that he unpacks mentally, that's what I think is that, like, it's like his lawyer training
helped
sort of
his comedy,
kind of, yeah. And at the same time, like, you know, it's just it's a very It's an odd path.
Yeah,
to
that's a unique skill set.
Yeah,
He's got a unique style of comedy. Like, and some of it is a little intellectual. And then there's like, you know,
titties.
the word titties is just
that's
funny
inherently
in
funny.
And of itself. It's just always going to
be
funny.
Well, and the only thing, I know we don't want to sprinkle in like just individual jokes, but I don't travel in first class, but I do fart there. Like, man, that's some lowbrow humor, but that's awesome.
That's your one direct reference that you get. That's your one
bit. I will say this is not a bit that we'll play, but one part of the
you're about to use your.
Well, I will. It doesn't matter. I will.
I'll just enforce these arbitrary rules.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
everybody.
He's gonna do whatever the fuck he wants.
Yeah,
tell you what.
Exactly. So. The one there's a bit in here in the or during the name segment about the fact that birds are one of the only animals that build their own houses and that they're one of the only animals that we build houses for, and he sort of expands upon that. But the funniest part to me in that bit is that one of the birds is named Lewis.
He does just like kind of toss that off. Like, hey, Lewis.
Like, he's just, you know, working his 9-to-5 or whatever. Like, yeah. That shit I thought was funny. Anyway.
I want to tell a story real quick.
Oh,
we're just going to get off the side for a second. Just speaking of birds, when I was listening to this earlier today, I remembered this story, and just now, every time I hear the word birds, actually for the rest of my life, I'll always remember this. But Nathan Kennedy and I, Nathan's a good friend of all of ours for many years.
We'll tell Nathan stories one of these days.
I'm going to tell one right now. Or should I not?
No, sure.
And go for it.
You set the table a little bit. Nathan is a longtime friend of many of ours, but probably known Shane longer.
Very unique
right?
personality.
He's a unique personality. He's Shane's
childhood best friend.
Ryan has mentioned this before, but Nathan is the kind of guy that used to stand at the doorway of clubs when they were closing in Austin and thank people for coming out, and they all thought it was his place.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
He's an interesting guy.
So one day we were all 18 and. Might have been some LSD involved. I don't know. But we went back to our house, and it was morning, and sun was coming up, and there were all of these birds just alight and song and flying around. And I see Nathan standing on our balcony of our apartment, and I walk over to him. I'm like, you okay, buddy? And he's got one tear running down his cheek, and he's like, birds have lives. Like, it just suddenly
occurred to him.
It just occurred to him that the birds have lives.
Paul McCartney has a career.
It's a very profound moment.
Hey, I do suspect they don't have lives that involve calling each other Lewis.
And then he said, have you ever really looked at your hands?
I'm pretty sure that came up at some point that night, too. All right, let's listen to that Demetri Martin bit.
All right, yeah, this is a little bit out of this is a segment from his
about the surprise party.
Yeah, about the surprise party from his introduction segment. Here it is.
I think surprise parties are weird because people jump up and they yell the word surprise at the party. I came home to my house and you guys emerged from my furniture. You don't have to tell me how to feel. I don't need, like, a hint from the group, you know? It's not like if you yell out another feeling, I'm going to have that one instead. I come home and everybody jumps up. Confidence! Oh, all right, yeah. Damn right, I feel great. Got to spend an hour at the party answering questions like, hey, so were you really confident when we jumped up and yelled out confidence? Yeah, I wasn't faking. I had no idea. I was confident. I mean, I came in feeling kind of lousy about myself, and I felt, yeah, really self-assured. It's a great confidence party. I'm so glad you guys were here for me.
Well, we've definitely got Kevin back because we got the omnipresent. Who's coming out?
Also,
that's
what I was going to bring up earlier. Is that so? We've talked about this in the last couple of episodes.
It turns into Studio 54 for about 5 seconds.
3 and 2 and on 1.
Yeah,
but you're not really doing that today. But you are forced. He's very forceful.
They're like darts.
2 weeks, Kevin. It took me 2 weeks until they finally trained me how to point.
Okay. Yeah, because you would point, and it would seem to be we weren't paying it. We're still like gabbing right up until the set. Gabbing, is that what we do?
That's a gab.
Fiddle farting around until you know 3 and 2 and 1, and then he would make a gesture, and it wouldn't be as forceful as Kevin that would cut through the night and would get our stupid attention.
It's a murmuring gesture. That's what Mark would do.
It's a murmur.
if you guys want to start talking.
Yeah, just go ahead.
We've been trained. The other thing that I had missed was the sibling rivalry. Like right before the show started, there was a little brother.
Oh, the great space heater debate?
Ryan went and bought a space heater so his balls wouldn't freeze off.
And now my brother is very happy that it's here.
Now that it's in place,
it's
a
nice addition.
But it's not to say that I didn't have my questions.
There was a bit of a tiff for a second. So I'm happy to have all of those three things back in place.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on.
It's given me great confidence.
Yes.
Confidence.
All right. Yeah.
No, I was very confident.
It's sort of like a self-hypnosis. Well, it's not like self-hypnosis, but
and
you know.
And favorite part from that bit, if you emerge from my furniture, that's what he says.
I do love the verbiage.
Yeah, no, it's great. So it's really great. So I do think, obviously, one of his gifts is the turn of phrase. And where he differs, I think, a little bit from the school of Hedberg and the school of Stephen Wright is that their delivery was so distinct, and he doesn't have that. So his bits have to kind of be rapier sharp for lap.
Yeah, I'll buy that. I didn't even think about that earlier. He does a little bit longer form, too.
Their deliveries were so distinct that it almost overshadowed the joke.
I agree.
You'd have to, like, get used to them before you'd notice the material as much. And
but they're both geniuses.
Of course. I mean, like no question.
One actively.
Well, Stephen Wright.
The other not so much anymore.
Very much kind of the, here's my joke, I'm going to deliver it, and I'm going to pause and wait for it to soak in so that you can laugh.
Well, I mean, that's half of his.
And then I'm going to move on.
That's half of his act, that he does it that way. I mean, like, who knows what that guy sounds like when he has sex, but, like, it's probably not like that.
Oh, my God, I can't believe he said that.
And let's, if we were wondering when the when did the show grind to a halt?
It took a turn.
Just about that.
A frightening turn.
So we are kind of at the point in the show where I think we ought to do the few minutes with.
Yeah,
and Shane, you picked the one for this week, so do you want to tell everybody what trouble they're getting into?
Yeah, so I thought it was fitting, since we're doing a comedy album this week, that we would pick a bit track from a comedy album, and I picked My Name is Hannibal off of Hannibal Buress's
first. Man who has been in the news as of late.
Yes, and we'll talk about that later. I didn't think about that when I chose this, but Kevin brought it up. He's been in the news quite a bit lately. So we're going to let you guys listen to this. This is it's a little bit longer than what we normally play for a few minutes with. So
you're such a dick, man. Why are you such a dick?
Hey, you know what? They're not going to have to hear the whole goddamn track, Ryan. I was going to say we might take a little bit of a longer break than normal, but they're not even going to know it anyway.
Anyway, that'll be fun. We'll listen to a little bit of Hannibal, and then we'll come back and talk about it. And then on the other end of that, we'll head back in for a little bit more Dimitri Martin. But first, a few minutes with Hannibal Buress.
Okay, so I thought it was fitting. I think I mentioned this a second ago to go ahead and do a comedy bit. For the intermission, picked My Name is Hannibal by Hannibal Buress, and which we have just listened to in the studio. And I'll tell you this, man. I have I've seen a fair amount of comedy live in my life. I've seen Louis C.K., who is arguably.
We saw Louis C.K.
That's why I'm pointing at you. Yeah, we saw.
Yeah, but they can't see that.
I know, but I was about to say.
Shane is pointing at Ryan.
I'm pointing at Ryan, but I was about to say Ryan and I saw Louis C.K. I mean, he's arguably the greatest comedian working today.
Yeah, for sure.
But the funniest comedian I've ever seen in person is Hannibal Buress. I walked out of his show and my stomach hurt for 2 days. It felt like I had the.
What did you eat while you were there?
It was popcorn.
It was like the best. If you ever want to like work on your abs like really intensely,
go watch Hannibal Buress.
Watch Hannibal Buress.
They actually put yoga mats out for the entire audience.
You remember when the big comedy tour came through at the racetrack, and I did the I repeated the Hannibal Buress bit that.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. So he's
wicked smart.
He's so. Fucking funny and that night was really great too because like he was drinking a little bit and he got heckled just a tiny bit, and the way that he deals with hecklers is in this funny like I'm almost like he's giving up, like he's just like just stop okay, just stop it,
just cut it out,
just cut, stop, okay. And then like he finished, he's like, okay, so those are all the jokes I have tonight, I'll go back to my older material now. You know, and then
you may have heard this before.
Then he ended up going ahead and doing almost an hour extra that night of just old material because he was getting kind of drunk and he felt like he should just keep going. It was a highly entertaining show.
Where did you guys see him?
Cap City Comedy Club.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
not going to see him in rooms that small anymore either. This is just like three years ago.
Cap City's still around, right? Yeah,
they are around, and they're trapped in like 1983.
Strip mall. It's like next to like a Firestone.
If you're in Austin, you haven't been to Cap City, go. If you are not in
especially
Austin,
especially if you have a speeding ticket that you need to have dismissed.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
They also do that. Mark with the practical nugget.
If you have a speeding ticket, go to the comedy club because they'll tell you funny stuff, give you pizza, and give you defensive driving class.
Also, clean up your room, and make sure you change your oil every now and again.
If you don't live in Austin, don't drive in just to go to Cap City Comedy Club. It smells like fried foods. I think like, I feel
it
like
does.
Whenever
it does.
I've been in the Cap City Comedy Club, it sort of defines when you hear comedians talk about comedy clubs. You know, the two drink minimum, the fried foods, people
it's totally
talking all night.
Equated. Like,
it's, yeah.
Like, well, it's weird, and it's like the comedy club in Austin. I mean, there's a couple others, but they don't get the names that Cap City does. But if you look at the thing from the outside. I mean, it just it looks like a
strip mall thing, like a shop.
The Moon Tower Comedy Festival now that
sure
is nationally kind of right.
And there's Velveeta Room, and there are a couple of other. There are certainly some improv rooms in town.
Well, that's also that speaks to the fact that a lot of the comedians that we would like to see or that we find funny are sort of considered alternative comedians, and they're playing a lot of alternative venues.
That's true.
You know, the comedians of comedy, like in 03, or I guess it was 04, like really, when they started playing, like, you know, mid-sized indie rock clubs and
fucking emos.
Yeah, like, yeah, I'm specifically thinking about that.
Where you could do 45 minutes on the state of the bathrooms. Like, that place is
dark.
Long lamented emos.
We were talking about Hannibal Buress.
Yeah, so Hannibal Buress. So this bit... I thought there are a couple of different things. Number one is I feel like this is one of those things where it really it's probably like three or four tracks into the record, and it sort of sets up who he is perfectly as a comedian. And he has the long first part of it is about how his name is actually Hannibal, and then he has this brilliant, just out of nowhere, genius thing right on the tail end about the man that invented the drink, Flaming Dr. Pepper. And those of you that have, I don't know.
I've had one too.
Well,
yeah.
And so like sort of unpacking that bit, one of the things I thought was really funny is like, so you find yourself like the way that he constructs the bit without going through it step by step is that it's like some guy in his basement who's just down there getting hammered.
Mad genius.
With like different combinations of the same thing.
Three ingredients. He only has three ingredients.
Yeah. It reminds me of Eddie Izzard's bit about the Heimlich maneuver when... Dr. Heimlich is in the basement trying to perfect his maneuver to stop choking.
Yeah, I mean, like on the surface, like it's similar in that like it's sort of a simple premise, but when you like sort of break it down, the thing that makes it funny is completely retarded. Like it's just like the idea that I mean, the thing that I couldn't help but think about was like, okay, so if this guy's in his basement hollering up at his wife that he's working on a recipe and he's going to have, quote, flaming Dr. Pepper money at some point.
Trademark.
Yeah, exactly. Air quotes, whatever. Then like, how could he ever be sober enough to know that when he actually tasted it? That was my only, like,
oh,
that's
my God. This is why you don't talk about comedy.
I know. It's that part's not funny, but Ryan doesn't like.
But it's true. He would be intoxicated, Kevin. That's right. God damn it.
Well, no, it's not. Not
there are consequences to consuming alcohol.
That's not where I'm going.
Maybe he was more practical. The point Maybe being he only is, did it once a day.
The point being is that if you are consuming a guzzling or whatever term you choose to use, if you're boozing it up, and you're setting your drink on fire every time, and they're high octane enough that they can catch on fire every time. How many chances at that do you get before you can't taste it anymore?
Well, those are people who died for their craft.
Oh, okay, sure. Anyway, whatever. Good talk, everybody.
Can we listen to something now?
I don't even know. I have no idea what just happened. But you were adamant and very animated about it.
Well, you put me in the role of the guy. Like, it's my part was funny. You're killing me.
Why don't we let the rest of our
let's go ahead and listen to that
show.
Dr. Pepper
yeah,
part.
Yeah, let's hear it first.
My favorite drink is the Flamin' Dr. Pepper. That's an amazing drink. I'll tell you what it is. You take a glass of beer, a shot of Amaretto, and you take a cap full of Bacardi 151. You pour that cap full in the Amaretto, light it on fire, drop it in the beer, chug it, and it tastes exactly like Dr. Pepper. The shit is magical. Three different liquors, and it tastes like Dr. Pepper. That shows you how dedicated the guy was that invented that drink. He said, man, I want to get messed up. But only if it tastes like Dr. Pepper. You know how many failed combinations this dude had to go through? That didn't happen on the first try. It took dedication, experimentation, patience. Vodka, gin, grenadine. Damn it! I'm trying scotch. Vodka again. A beer. Fuck! Honey, you should come up for dinner. No, I'm working on something. What are you working on? I'm working on this magical drink that has three different liquors, and it tastes like Dr. Pepper, and it involves fire. That even makes sense. Yes, it does make sense. And I'm going to divorce you when I got all this flaming Dr. Pepper money. You unsupportive bitch. You never backed up my dreams.
I remember having flaming Dr. Peppers at Ivory Cat, actually. Back in the day.
Touché.
God.
Well, Kevin and I were roommates with the former manager of that esteemed establishment.
Exactly. I mean that is a drink that you only get in a very special establishment.
It's kind of it's a little bit of a bachelorette party drink.
Isn't it more of a dare than a drink?
Oh, yeah.
Is it really?
I mean, you're right. It looks dangerous.
I'm with you on the bachelorette party thing. I think, like, dicks need to be pinned to shirts, like, in order to take flaming Dr. Peppers.
I was like...
With what?
You're like, you said dicks, and I was like...
Where's he going with this?
Yeah, clearly there were dicks there. Yeah, I remember that place.
Oh, yeah, there's that,
well,
too.
Well, no, if people are doing flaming Dr. Peppers, yes, there are going to be dicks in the establishment, in the metaphorical sense.
Anyway, no one would ever say, hey... This is a nice gathering. Why don't we make some flaming Dr. Peppers?
You don't bring it to a Sunday brunch.
You're not going to a 5-star restaurant where you're going to propose and like, let's take flaming Dr. Peppers.
You're nice,
honey. I want to spend the rest of my life
Kentucky
with
Derby viewing party. You know, all right. Who wants mint juleps and who wants flaming Dr. Peppers?
That is the difference at a racetrack between the people who show up on Kentucky Derby Day and the lifers.
There you go.
Like, and go and spend any time at any racetrack, and that is so – that's scary true. Anyway, but Hannibal Buress is wicked funny. There's no way around
and
that.
And in the news these days.
Oh, yes. You're right.
And so this may be potentially career-defining for him. Like, he's a lot more well-known now.
And some people –
has he done something with Kanye?
Yes.
No.
No, but Kanye could have handed him his career. You're right.
Yeah. Exactly. If any of you have been living under a rock, then you probably
found out that Dr. Huxtable is the biggest pervert.
No, didn't find out. He said living under. If you have been living under a rock, then you probably
you don't know that Dr. Huxtable.
I thought you said then you probably know.
I
can't hear what the fuck you're saying.
Anyway, no, I think let's just clear this up. Yeah. So basically, in a performance in somewhere on the East Coast, Philly or somewhere else, Hannibal Buress said something that was part of his act that got recorded by somebody in the audience, where he basically was talking about the fact that Bill Cosby, or even if it was anecdotal, that Bill Cosby is really big on other comedians not to work blue, and he was like, why should I listen to what this guy says if he's an alleged rapist?
Yeah, he said, have you guys ever Googled the words Bill Cosby and rapist?
Right.
Bill Cosby. And so then that set off a firestorm, got all over social media, all over the internet.
Traditional media, too.
I know.
All over the place. Like,
yeah. Basically started the ball rolling with all of the women coming out accusing him of his drugging and raping them. And, I've read so many of these stories, and the thing that's the weird thing about it to me, I mean, it's abhorrent and crazy, the rapist part of it. But the weird thing is I read a couple of different stories by women. One was really good friends with this. There were two really good friends in Vegas, both female, in the late 70s, or like 78, 79, 80. And this one had a consensual sexual relationship with Cosby for a couple of years. And the last time she saw him, he drugged her, and she just thought it was weird and
we'll say allegedly, but
sure, okay,
but it's like 21 now.
But this is the thing that's the weird. When I read this story, the woman that wrote the story wasn't the woman that was drugged. That woman is
I've
dead
read that
now.
Same story. I know what you're talking.
And she
about,
was saying the weird thing. The woman that was drugged, she was just like, why? I mean, we've already been having sex for a while. Why would he drug me? And she was like, obviously they had had sex when she was drugged. And so that's the thing that's the weirdest to me, is the drugging part.
Yeah. Well, the thing, yeah. I mean, all of that is under. All of that is weird, and I'm not. What my point is that I thought was interesting about this was that some people have been up in arms over the fact that it was Hannibal Buress who's caused this sort of maelstrom.
Yeah,
that it was like that's like. But who is this man who wasn't? Well, he's a guy who like that's the only way that.
But these allegations
have been organically.
Apparently, and I didn't know about them until this shitstorm. But they've been public, I guess, since like 2005 or something.
Well, no. That's just from one. There was one woman that settled. She settled with him. She'd filed allegations and settled, and so that's when stuff started. It got contained for a while with that settlement, and they've been floating around for a number of years, these accusations, and then the shit hit the fucking fan.
Anyway, the point being is like some people were fussy that it took a comedian who didn't have a firsthand experience, a male comedian who didn't have a firsthand experience, to sort of bring this to the public consciousness. But there's no, like, genie's out of the bottle now.
It's
like,
a complicated story.
It is complicated.
A lot of these accusations are coming, 20, 30 years after the fact, and it makes a lot of people are dubious to their authenticity. But
hey, man, if you've got 20, 21 women
with the exact MO,
exact same story that aren't coordinating with each other, and there's a reason why he's not speaking up and only speaking through attorneys. Like, it's messed up. Also, this shit is not funny right now.
No, it's
exactly.
Not funny. Anyway, yeah. And,
okay, okay.
What's so weird about it is that there's this comedian that has surfaced these issues about another comedian, And none of this shit is funny, really. I mean,
no, it's not particularly funny. But I will say, and it's also the kind of thing that it's really easy to hijack a podcast and talk about something that's like kind of a hot button issue.
I just think it's interesting.
But I do think, yeah, it is interesting.
It's highly interesting, and in such a left turn from what you think.
Quick, somebody burp.
No, I wish I could fart.
I was going to say, why don't you just fart real quick?
I just farted.
I wish I could. I will tell this anecdote. Last night we had our employee party.
You going to fart in first class?
No.
Is this your Christmas party?
Hear me out. We were supposed to bring white elephant gifts, spend under $10. Only three of us actually brought the gifts. I was one of them. So I bought Silly Putty, Bubbles, and a whoopee cushion. But since there were only three of us that brought them, one of my colleagues was like, hey, why don't we just give them all to Maria, who's our dishwasher? And it's like, she's really underappreciated. She works really hard. But Maria doesn't speak any English, and she's like 65 years old. So I just really want to see her face when she opens up her gift, and it's Bubbles, Silly Puppy, Silly Putty, and a whoopee cushion.
Did you just say Silly Puppy?
Silly Puppy, yes.
That's my
little kid cover band.
Skinny Puppy songs. It's like Little Kid Industrial.
Yeah.
I hope she makes them into ornaments.
Silly Puppy. I do. Anyway,
I hope she makes them into ornaments.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell she's going to do with a whoopee cushion, but
very late Christmas. But
she's got to feel welcomed.
All right, so listen, this segment has run way long.
All right, we're out of here.
We're going to get back
Let's get back into Demetri Martin.
We're going to talk a little bit more about Demetri Martin coming up next. So I think it's probably safe to say that Demetri Martin has a slightly differing take on his comedic approach than Hannibal Buress. Both are funny. But they come at it a little bit differently.
That's like some Gene Wilder,
Richard Pryor
Silver Streak.
Yeah. Shit. that would actually be a great bill together. Those guys could tour.
That would be a great movie, like Demetri Martin playing the Gene Wilder character in Hannibal Buress.
Finally, the sequel you'd never asked for. Still silver streaking? I don't know. Gene Wilder's still alive, I think.
He's still around.
Gene Wilder is, yeah.
Yeah. So he could do a cameo as the cranky old guy who wonders why.
No, just the cranky, slightly scary older guy.
That guy has a great menacing look.
When I was a kid, I alternately loved.
You're talking about Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh,
it scared the shit out of me.
Was mortified, so frightened by that movie.
Oh, I loved him.
Oh, no, I loved it, but it scared the fucking piss out of
me. Well, I happened to, and I know that I said I wouldn't do this much, but I did watch that once on hallucinogenic drugs, and
That's a bad idea.
Yeah, terrible idea. Anyway, that happened 20 years ago, if you're listening, Katie or Mom.
Anyway, most of the, I guess maybe what that tells me is that, Shane, I assume that you're one of the bad kids, like you identified with the...
He ran with the rough crowd.
Yeah, that somebody like... You're one of the kids that didn't make it all the way through to the end with Charlie?
No, when I was four?
Yeah, when you were four.
No, it was just frightening and...
Dude, I got the same feeling like a chocolate river.
And there's this fat. He deserved it.
Yeah. And there's... Apparently. No, it had nothing to do with the kids. It had everything to do with like the quiet implied menace of Gene Wilder. That's what was scary.
He was kind of passive-aggressive, wasn't he?
And that's, we can sidebar on that for a long time, and that was sort of not my intent. But
at some point, we should talk about Demetri Martin,
exactly.
Stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
Who's that?
So I think getting back to Demetri... sorry. I think one of the funny...
Fart?
This was a very weird one.
It was bizarre, but... I think one of the fun things about Demetri Martin's record is that he seems to sort of just take us along for the ride. And Seems like he's having as much fun or more fun than anybody in the audience.
Well, and I think, like, really good stand-up comedy, that's what happens. Like, they're having a blast up there, and it's infectious. Like, it rubs off on the audience.
Yeah, it can't.
And I think he clearly is doing that.
It can't just be telling jokes and telling them well. There has to be an element of whether or not it's real spontaneity. It definitely has to be an element
of... It has to feel spontaneous.
It has to feel spontaneous, right.
Well, and he's one of these comedians that likes to riff on those thoughts that I think everybody has in their heads, you know, and that...
There are a ton of bits in there that I'm like, yeah, I've kind of thought of that. Never really put it together that way, but...
Right.
Yeah, man, you just made that funny.
He makes it funny, exactly.
Well, and yeah, if you can't be oblique and a little bit sort of off-center in the way that you approach that stuff, it doesn't really work.
No, that's why the crowd work is so important to... Adding or when comedians come on and tell, like, work up jokes, like, just in the beginning of their act about whatever city they're in, it helps set the it's sort of like a misdirection. It's like a magician with misdirection, you
sure.
know. It helps set it up as though he's coming up with everything on the spot. But Demetri Martin is really good about that stuff, except when I'll throw a little curveball here. When he
wild card.
Pulls out his instruments, and I was really happy to hear that he didn't do that on this album until the end. Now, a lot of the one-liners, he's...
Well, he kind of does that, like, they're all one-liners with the...
Right, but I'm saying a lot of them are really funny when he pulls out the guitar, but I don't have a lot of use for funny songs in comedy.
Well,
Flight of the Conchords.
No, I typically like my music and my comedy separate.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, Bill Hicks used to pull out... Funny songs always suck. Sarah Silverman does it. Flight of Conchords is a little bit different because their whole act is pretty much just based around songs. But yeah, like I'm with Ryan. Like I like the two separate.
Well, and let me go on the record as saying, like, I think done well, somebody like Zach Galifianakis, which is that's a whole other crazy thing to talk about because that guy is a comfortable pianist. And really only he's a comfortable pianist. But essentially uses that instrument when he was mostly doing stand-up.
Galifianakis
instead of making
different.
Shitty
it's
movies.
Not the, actually, it's but, not that far off from what Demetri Martin is doing with his guitar on this one. Because it's not
agreed.
A song.
Right.
He's not trying to make a song funny. He's just accompanying short jokes.
Right, exactly. And
I'm totally okay with that.
It's only filler. And I read one review that sort of said that, like, him putting that in as the last segment on this record was a little bit like kind of like an encore, like the idea of playing the greatest, like appeasing the people who only know you for that thing at the end.
Yeah, this is the thing you know me for. I'm going to do a little bit of it. Thank you. Good night.
Well, right. that's what I'm saying. Like, I was glad he put it right at the end of the album rather than build the whole act around those gimmicks.
But I do think that, like, circling back to a little bit of what we were talking about earlier, one of the things that I thought was coolest and most interesting and sort of exploratory based on his previous work and where this record went was the idea that he gets to roam a little bit more. And I thought, like, the whole thing about we listened to a bit a minute ago before we jump back into this off air about the sort of, like, all of the things that are automatic now that used to not be automatic, like paper towel.
For no reason.
Yeah, paper towel dispensers and whatever, and toilets and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we should play a little bit of that.
Yeah, why don't you do that?
Okay, we're going to hop back into this. Maybe not hop, but we will.
Like the bunny hop?
yes, exactly. Clearly.
Slide.
We're going to, this will be a little bit of Demetri Martin. On things that are automatic in the bathroom, which is a sort of terrible way to put that. Here you go.
I don't like automatic paper towel dispensers because they don't tell you when they're not working. So I end up in the bathroom just looking like a shitty magician for a few minutes. Waving my arms around. What do I have to do to get a piece of paper, man? Automatic paper towel dispenser is a solution to something that was never a problem. Hey man, you know how people get a paper towel when they need one? Yeah, they just take their hand and pull it and then they have one? Yeah. We're gonna change that. We're going to use lasers and make it really complicated. That seems pretty unnecessary. Extremely unnecessary. Yeah, that's the idea. We're going to work on the sinks, too. Oh, yeah? What are you going to do there? We're going to get rid of the hot and cold handles and just have a sensor, and they'll have to conjure the water to get it out of the faucet. Like a little rain dance with their hands. But then they won't be able to adjust the water temperature. Fuck them. We're going to finish up with the toilets. Oh, yeah, what are you doing there? Oh, you know when someone's sitting on the toilet and they move like a millimeter? Yeah? We're thinking of having a roaring rapid explode under their ass. Why would you do that? Gotta have turnover. We're going to scare the shit out of them. Get them out of there.
That was talk about paper towels and other things you'll find in the bathroom. Here's another song from Candy. Just making that up. Sorry.
Kevin has morphed into a titty denter DJ.
It's now appearing on the center stage, Candy.
Give it up for Brashes. So I don't know what happened there. Anyway, the point is,
pour some sugar on me.
Sorry. So we're back. We've talked about this at the top of the show. We're back in my garage for the first time in a long time. Unbeknownst to the show, I've been in my garage often since then. But still, this is the first time we're recording. That part's fun. I did want to...
Wait, why are you... Are you going somewhere with...
Yeah, I'm going.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Now, I was going to pivot...
Because based on the first part of this segment, I don't know.
Easy killer.
Yeah. And fair. I will pivot and jeté, to use the old...
Dennis Millerism.
Yeah. Anyway, whose brother books Moon Tower?
I did not know that.
That's true. So, yeah, there's a little bit of, part of the reason that Austin gets some of that stuff is that there's an infrastructure that exists.
This is some Alex Jones level conspiracy theory shit.
I don't know.
I don't think that's quite Alex Jones level.
Yeah, I think it is.
That dude's fucking apeshit nuts.
have you seen, like, the conspiracy online?
Listen, you're gonna hijack the beginning of
this
story.
Let's hand this back to Kevin.
Okay, Kevin, it's your week.
Some other time we'll talk about the Moon Tower Comedy Festival, which is great for the city. So anyway, beyond that, I do think that it's important to mention a couple of bits that I thought didn't quite hold up as much, hold up as strongly as some of the other stuff does. And I frankly think that that's natural in the evolution of a comedy recording.
Any recording. I mean, an album.
And like I said, there are probably, and I'm guesstimating here, but 117 different jokes. They're all really short.
Yeah. Most of them are strong. The guy's clearly like gaining strength as it goes. But I thought the okay thing with the okie dokie
short
bits,
for okie dokie.
Yeah. Was
still made me laugh out loud.
I did chuckle at it, but I thought, okay, well, you know, I mean, that was there's sort of a long tail on that kind. And sure. And what I couldn't shake was, do you guys know what the... And there are sort of lots of... there's lots of chatter on the actual origin of that phrase, but do you guys know sort of what the common...
I think it was a president who would sign...
Andrew something. Jackson.
Yeah, all right, yeah. I don't remember it, but I do remember that I learned it in our 1977 World Book Encyclopedia set.
Well, and if you dig it up on...
It's all correct, actually, and he...
O-L-K-O-R-E-C-C-T, or whatever. The legend is, one of many legends around that word, is that Andrew Jackson was a really shitty speller. And, or that the evolution of that spelling changed, I don't know.
Spelling was kind of fluid back then, but...
Yes, anyway... He does not. He doesn't get credit for being an exemplary speller. Let's put it that way.
I don't know that it was that fluid. what Kevin just spelled. I don't think there was that much fluidity in spelling.
O L space. Well,
K U R T Y D T.
Yeah.
Well, hey man, the guy was head of a certain segment of the Western Hemisphere. You know, he probably knew something.
Anyway, point is, I thought the okay okie dokie bit was probably not as strong as some of the other ones, but you know, again, you got to have the couple skates so you can get back to the high octane stuff, you know.
Well, and Shane and I were talking off air about
I totally did not grab on to that analogy, but okay.
I don't know.
This is what happens when I have beer with Riesling in it.
However, yep.
Oh yeah, yeah. I did think that the yep bit was pretty funny, and these go on, and we're kind of getting to the point where we're almost to the end of the show.
Yeah, but we're wrapping it up soon.
Well, and here's a thing that I've been wanting to bring up. Like, something he does is he sort of deconstructs the English language, or at least the American idiom English language. And that's a thing that he's really strong at. And I think this particular bit, like, kind of shows his strength in that.
It's just funny.
Well, and that's the main.
You put all your book smarts there you want, motherfucker.
Damn right, man.
Wait, are we talking about Hank Williams again?
We probably always kind of are, aren't we, though? Yeah.
Boat seats.
It's all window.
I'm never going to get over that.
Oh, holy shit. I totally forgot about that. I have to say this right now.
This is going to be incongruous to anybody listening.
So we'll apologize.
No. I completely forgot about this. And I just heard Kid Rock's new single, his newest single.
Oh, God.
It's entitled Jesus and Bocephus. It's talking about how growing up in the South, he always had right there with him Jesus under one arm.
And Hank Williams Jr.
And Bocephus under the other. Oh, so nice. Thank you very much, Kid Rock.
Good. Speaking of...
Well, stocking stuffer for next year for your kids, Kevin.
Jesus and Bocephus.
Speaking of analogies can't understand.
The Dukes of Hazzard.
Speaking of a horrible rhyme, by the way, anyway, like Jesus, Bocephus.
Anyway, other things we won't get to. I did appreciate the fact the sort of we won't sadly be able to play you guys a clip for the interplay between the phrase it takes guts and it takes balls. Although I did think the idea of balls as a method of encouraging people to stop smoking would be pretty entertaining if it wasn't effective.
Yeah, as a smoker, I'm not so sure I'm behind that.
Yeah,
but.
Well, and behind it is exactly where you would be.
we never got to the talking. Well, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, we never got to. I interrupted with Jesus and Bocephus, and we were going to talk about about the bit with Yep.
Well, Yep, you know, essentially, it's I actually would love to play the clip, but
and we will.
Things that are appropriate to say in bed.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Not
necessarily. Yep. Yep.
or as I thought of. Yep.
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 Yep, there it is.
why don't you play that little thing?
Okay. Yeah, this is a little bit of his take on Yep and where it might not be as appropriate.
When you're having sex with somebody, you can say yes or yeah or uh-huh. But for some reason you can't say yep. Yep. Oh, yep, baby. Yep, 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 indeed! Affirmative.
Affirmative, boys.
Yep.
Affirmative.
Yep.
Indeed.
Yeah. Yeah, you listen to that bit, you spend any time at all with it, and you sort of find yourself trying to think of other words that you could use instead, and yeah, those he pretty much picked the best ones out.
I think he spent a little time on it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's we have gotten to the end of our first foray into a comedy record,
and our first episode since being rejoined by.
Mr. Kevin Other Newsom.
Here, gentlemen.
Yay!
Yeah, we'll raise our literal and virtual chalices. There you go. Clang away.
All in all, I thought it was pretty funny.
No, it's a funny record. And You know, and like I said, like I think my personal preference is I'm probably more drawn to comedians who do bits that sound like stories without being, you know, whatever. Like, without sort of being storytellers, for lack of a better term. Like, some of the, you know, and frankly, now that we mentioned Zach Galifianakis earlier tonight, like, I think Zach Galifianakis is actually probably closer in the school of Dimitri Martin than he is.
Well, you take a dash of Zach Galifianakis, dash of Stephen Wright, dash of Mitch Hedberg. But really, like, he's got his own voice.
It's funny. He's a funny guy.
I think he's a guy at the height of his, like, comedic craft right now. And good for him, and good for us.
And I guess my point is like I wouldn't enjoy it as much because of its form if he weren't so funny. So this was a fun exploration for me, and thank you for joining me on it.
Yeah, I look forward to doing more comedy. You know, it's fun working our way through trying to figure out. You know, we talked before about doing a, you know, three subsequent shows, comedy records, but I think it'll be more fun to just intersperse them
peppered
occasionally
in every now and then.
Sure, yeah.
So but Shane, have you got next week's record?
Yes. Okay, I've been wanting to do this for a long time. Sturgill Simpson, Turtles on the Way. Like,
I've been wondering when that was going to happen.
Is this the country going. Radiohead?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I became aware of this guy. I don't know, about 5-6 months ago. And so there was a piece in Salon equating him to Radiohead, saying he was the country version of Radiohead. And I don't necessarily – I get it, like, having listened to this record many times. Like, it is really interesting. There's some psychedelia going on. It's country music psychedelia. He drops DMT and LSD and psilocybin into the lyrics of the first song, and about reptile. This is a good thing. I've specifically listened to the first three songs on this record like 6 months ago and stopped myself so we could do this show because.
All right, well, stop yourself now.
Well, no, but I do want to. I have to say one thing real quick. The third, I believe it's the third track, the one that I stopped myself on, is a cover of When in Rome's The Promise. So if you want to see, a new psychedelic country musician, or listen to a new psychedelic country musician do a cover of The Promise by When in Rome.
Just skip right to that one.
I'll just listen to this record by Sturgill Simpson. And Ryan, are you picking the single? Do you know what it is?
Yes. It's Spinoza.
You found generational?
It's actually not the generational. It's just generational.
I said generational.
No, I know.
You started.
But I know. I won't. I want to put a determiner on there, and it doesn't get one. But yes, Spinoza.
Okay. And lest we go any further, I want to take a second and just make sure that we thank Mark for stepping in for me while I was out.
He has been rock solid in your stead.
Yeah, it's been really fun too over there. They have a wonderful dog and a wonderful cat that I at least made good friends with. And
they miss you.
The dog is really codependent, and the cat is super sweet.
And it was fun times.
Well, and
there was an elf on the shelf randomly the whole time we were over there.
Good times, everybody.
Yeah. Well, Mark, thank you again. This was really cool.
Always glad to be a part, however I can help out.
And we will definitely drag you to the forefront again. And who knows, maybe now that we got a space heater, I just might live in my garage. But
I'm taking that thing home with me.
Yeah, I'm going to bring
I'm bringing it back next week.
All right. Well, in the meantime, this, I guess, is Somebody Likes It. I'm Kevin.
I'm Mark.
I'm Ryan.
Shane.
We'll see you next week.